What's up, mother suckers? This is your African king of comedy, Michael Blackson. If you have not subscribed to Real Life Street Star, get your life together. Subscribe right now. Push the button. Shut up. Don't look at me.
Real life street star.
You know what time it is.
Everybody start clapping right now. We got a legend in the building. Michael Blackson in the building. What's up, brother?
Yeah, when they gonna finish your ceiling? I'm just fucking with y'all.
Yeah. Shit, it's nice here, man.
Do you think we getting ripped off? We paying like $4,600.
Just for this one room?
No.
Oh, nice. I mean, you downtown Dallas, man. Everything is expensive now. Everybody trying to move out here to Dallas, so.
You gonna move out here? Would you move out to Dallas?
I'll definitely move out here to Dallas. Dallas almost in the middle of the country, and you could pretty much, you live here, you like 3 hours from everywhere. Less than three hours to New York, LA, Philly, DC. So this is a good central area for a comedian, for real. If you really think about it, it's not a bad idea.
What about the scene though? I know it's good as travel, but like.
I mean, it's great. You know, I've been coming here for a very long time. And I love it here. It's a great mix of raising a family and turning up at the same time and being relaxed and chill. You know, I mean, you never know. Go to Kansas City, you'll run right back here, motherfucker. Dallas is one of the places that is definitely on the up and rise. So y'all got a good place here to live.
Would you say, you know, when COVID happened, it seemed like comedians was finding their creative ways to kind of get their shit off. Do you feel like you're back?
Yeah, we back. I mean, I was doing all kinds of shit when COVID happened. I was Titty Tuesday, Twerking Thursdays. I was on like live strip shows on my IG live. It was crazy. It's wherever to make some money. And then the comedy clubs hit us up. When COVID happened, I thought it was over for live entertainment. I really thought it was over. I went to my bank account. I'm like, okay, I got this amount of money left. If I just spend this amount of day, I could live for 30 years, and I better die after 30 years, motherfucker, because then I'm gonna be homeless if I'm not dead. So, but then 3 months later, it's like, yeah, I wanna go back to work. I'm like, yes. And then I was ready to go back, and then I thought about it, I'm like, I'm not ready because I forgot my shit. We stay home for 3 months, and then you gotta go write new shit on COVID. So I'm like, I need 30 more days, 30 days, I just put some shit together. And then I started going back. In fact, my first place when I went back, it was in July. July, I went to Memphis was first. And after that was Arlington Improv was the second place. So by Memphis was like the guinea pig. And by the time I got to Arlington, I got my shit back together. And then was back rolling.
Man, I went to see your show. Boy, you were funny as hell in person, bro.
I appreciate that, man. I've been putting work for a long time, man. Greatness don't happen overnight.
I just saw a skit where you just did the 40-meter dash.
In 1 second, 1.28 second, motherfucker, I'm gangster, nigga. I've been chased by lions my whole life, nigga.
So if you and Cat Williams were in a race, who would win?
I'm probably winning, man. I whooped that nigga's ass. I went. His perm, his dreadlock gonna hold him back, man. You know, everybody could run, nigga. 40 yard dash, and your fat ass could probably do it too. You know what I mean? You just making every week, nigga, making a video of him run. Nigga, stop running. The fuck out of here. Anybody could run. We could all run.
Man, you've been a part of a lot of legendary things, man. I want to touch right now on the state of comedy. Yeah. Right? Because with that, the Cat Williams did 61-some million views, right? Mm-hmm. We've never seen them type of views.
Never.
And then it seems like all the outrage from the comedians came about. And you were probably one of the most vocal people, you know what I'm saying, as far as the interview. You don't like what's going on. When you first seen that interview and you saw the effects that it was having on the comedy world, I think it peered back a layer that we didn't even know was going on.
Yeah.
Has it always been that volatile with comedians?
Nah, you know, I mean... The kind of like, you know, as you get older, man, you just start to express yourself more. That's what that's all about. You know, Cat is getting older, Money getting older, everybody getting older, they feel like they've been fucked over. Now it's time to speak their mind, you know. And there's nothing wrong with speaking your mind. I don't think it's just wise to tear the niggas down in a process. You know, and it was great for comedy because when it happened, everybody started looking up comedy shit, Googling shit up, finding this shit out, you know. But I thought that everybody he talked bad about, I thought he had personal issues with them. You know, I knew he had personal issues with me. I knew that was coming.
But that confused me because I seen y'all on so many things together. You know, he's a Friday After Next, Wildin' Out, Repo. Y'all got mad moves.
Well, Wildin' Out time, we wasn't really fucking with each other.
Okay.
Yeah. So what happened was me and Kev was really cool. Like, really, was really cool. Like, we have huge respect for each other. Till I did an interview with Drink Champ, and I thought I was giving the nigga a compliment, but I guess it came off wrong, and he took it personal. You saw the interview? You know what I'm talking about?
Yeah,
I saw. No, I said, Kat is probably the most lovable comedian on earth. I don't give a fuck how much crack y'all think that nigga smoked.
Right.
But even Noriega didn't even look at it as an insult. Nobody pay attention to it.
Right.
You know, some punk bitch told the nigga, Mike just called you a crackhead. And he just looked at, you know, he probably just saw that part, didn't even read the rest of the part, and then he got mad about it. So when he got mad, he started putting up subliminal messages on my comments on my page. I'm like, this nigga mad about it. I'm like, I didn't even mean it in a bad way. I'm trying to give you a compliment. And I'm a comedian. Even my compliment's gonna have some kind of joke to it.
Right.
That's what we do. But, you know, he probably took it personal. Maybe he do smoke crack. I don't fucking know. I know if a nigga call me a crackhead, I don't do crack, I'm not gonna get mad.
Have you ever done any hard drugs ever?
Never. I did get high once by accident, and it happened in Africa. I was hanging out with my boy, Fuse ODG. He Afrobeat star from England, but he from Ghana. And I was at his house in Ghana, and he, you know, had this little drink. And I tasted it, I'm like, that drink sweet, it's good. Because I'm not a drinker. I'm not really a big-time drinker. I don't smoke. I don't do none of that stuff. And I'm like, that drink was so sweet. I'm like, that shit good. Let me get more. He said, Mike, calm down. That shit got some, you know, weed, whatever is in it. I'm like, there's no way this shit gonna make me high. This shit tastes too good. Man, I kept drinking it, man. 2 hours later, I saw 1982, motherfucker. Everything that happened to me in 1982 started coming back. Man, I went to my room. I started folding clothes. I was paranoid. I'm like, oh, my God, let this fucking feeling go away. I had to sleep that shit up. I woke up, I'm like, thank you, Lord, I got my life back together. I ain't never getting high no more. I was done. So that's as high as, that's probably as high as I ever got.
Do you feel like this comedy shit is turning to like street shit?
Yeah, but I got a gun on me right now. I'm gonna shoot all y'all niggas. It's not that, man. These niggas ain't doing nothing. Mike ass ain't gonna beat up no Shannon Sharp.
You wanna talk about doing no fighting?
Ain't none. You know, Mike had a special coming out. He was promoting special. You know, Cat Williams was trying to go on tour, and that's why he did all that shit. But I'm not sure. Did y'all go see the show yet? Because he was here.
No, I saw yours. I just went to see yours.
I appreciate that. Yeah. Now, but he was here two nights. Right. I'm curious to know what he's talking about because I'm hoping he's piggybacking up what he did. And there's nothing wrong. Go on stage, clown the comedian. That's all good. There's nothing wrong with that. All he had a problem with him like doing shit to like kill other comedians' career. That's bad.
Right.
When you go up there and say, oh, Cedric's a joke thief, I'm like, first of all, no. Stealing jokes is the biggest thing you could do to a comedian. We ready to like shoot you, fight you, whatever. Because you know, it's hard to come up with brilliant material.
Right.
But if you look at that joke that they're talking about, so many guys have done something similar to it. You know what I mean? J.B. Smooth probably was the first one I remember. Mm-hmm. You know, Cedric, all that shit about getting a car, playing the music, you know, that shit is stock. In comedy, we have jokes and you have stock joke. A certain roast is a stock. When there's a stock joke, that means everybody could use it. And that idea is a stock idea. So to come up with, to wait 25 years later and, you know, and go degrade Cedric Entertainer, who is like a comedy legend. You know, like we all trying, like we all are. You know, he's a TV star now. And how his fans supposed to feel about that? You gonna say this nigga steal jokes? How are you gonna buy tickets to see Cedric if he thinks he's a joke thief? You doing shit to fuck up his career. That wasn't cool. Go roast, make fun of nigga. The fat joke about him looking like a whatever, that was funny.
Right.
You know, but don't go and degrade, talking about Ricky Smiley. I put in contact, put a dress on. What was that for? Now, how am I going to feel comfortable going to buy Ricky's smart ticket if he put on a dress? You know, certain things you don't do. Make the joke, you know what I mean? You know, then he mentioned Michael Blackson. He said comedians don't get booed enough. That's how he ended up with Michael Blackson. You mad at me because I don't get booed? Because I go up there and I work hard every day. You know, he went a whole year where he got booed for like on tour. He got booed everywhere. I don't know what the nigga smoked, what he ate, what he did, whatever he did. Nigga was fucked up. I seen it with my own eyes. And even with that, it was stress. He was going, whatever he was going through with drugs and shit, we still respect him. We still love him, you know? That was probably his crackhead era. I don't know when that was. He said he never did no hard drug, but look on YouTube. Look up Cat Williams on stage on crack. Put it in there. So, you know, he did some shit that was like hurting people's career. You know what I mean? So, but whatever it is, it's kind of good for comedy because it made people start looking people up, you know. But it didn't help. It ain't helping Ricky. It helping Cedric. You know, I'm not selling more shows because of that. I've been selling shows out.
But did it go up? Did it go even crazy? Because I'm sure,
honestly, probably the only one that probably benefited from this is him, of course. Mm. Shannon Sharp.
And I was gonna ask you about
he walked like he's handicapped, motherfucker.
Why is so much blowback coming to Shannon Sharp? Like you got DL Hughley, Colin Messi. y'all are killing Shannon. But do y'all feel some type of way about Shannon?
He said what?
Do y'all feel some way about Shannon?
No. We love Shannon. It's just that he was, you know, some. Comedy just felt like, you know, he was just, what he was doing was bringing negativity to black people. You know what I mean? You bring guys out here, because here's the thing with interviews. Certain interviews, especially on a big platform, and you feel like a person going up that line and saying things they shouldn't be saying, like, edit this shit out. That's what it felt like. You know, but we in the podcast era. There's a whole new era, and everybody trying to go viral. So the crazy thing niggas say is what niggas look in the post. And it worked. Nigga, 62 million views, whatever. He made a whole lot of fucking money. And, you know, but in the process of it, you know, he tore people down because he the only one that had the final control over it. You know, you could have been like, you know what, let me, because if you can't get confirmation, you know, if this nigga saying something, you got to talk to the other guy first. You know, find out if it's true before you put it out. You know what I mean? So now, he putting shit out, and other comedians now knew we roasting his ass because he putting this shit out. You know, you should have edited that shit out, cut that lies out, nigga.
How you feel about Shannon Sharp going viral for the outfit that he had on?
Oh, man. Hey, nigga, you trying to get me knocked out by a big nigga. Fuck you. But you know, the thing about everybody had at least 10% of people have a weird walk. That's his weird ass walk. Whether he's born with it, whether he got a chromosome missing, I don't fucking know, man. I'm not fucking with Shannon. You know, I'm a football fan, and of course, I was a fan of him being one of the greatest tight end. And I just hope he's just a tight end.
Pause.
Not a loose end. I'm just glad. I don't know shit about what's going on with Shannon Sharp.
When you got into comedy, were you naturally funny or did you have to develop your style?
I think it's easier when you're naturally funny. I mm-hmm. think I was. And I was working at that moment. I was just 20 years old working at Domino's Pizza and my friends thought I was funny. They're like, you funny, man, go to open mic. I said, what the fuck is that? Is they just go sign up in a comedy club and you just go on stage. And that's how I started going. So somebody thought I was funny. And that's why, So it's easier when you're naturally funny than trying to, you know. Because you go to comedy school, you know. You go to comedy school. Yeah, the comedy school's out there. You can learn how to, you know, deliver a joke and your presence on stage. But it's a lot easier when it's a given talent from God. You know what I'm saying?
What do you think about the Friday curse? You heard of that?
No.
That everybody from Friday, next Friday passed and stuff like that?
Let me see. I mean, a lot of people died from that movie. I mean, I don't look at it as a curse. Let's go back. Let's see Friday. Man, we lost a lot. At least, what, five? Is five of them or six? Let's start giving the names. And then let's see what happened to that.
Well, I don't know. I know the. Yeah, I know the Friday names. Pops. Okay.
Pops. I mean.
Yeah. Tiny.
Pops. Tiny. Yeah. That. Something was so surprising. Some, you know, like Zoo, the Tiny, of course, Bernie Mac. You know. I mean, I'm not sure. I'm always gonna say it was. You know, it's a curse. It's just that, you know, Ice Cube was brilliant, and he got the popness comedians and put them in one place.
How was he able to do it back then? Because it seemed like, you know, you hear people now saying, man, I only got $1,000 to depart. But it seemed like he was able just to put y'all together, and he got the most talented roster, it seemed like, as far as a independent movie.
You know, but people keep saying Ice Cube did. But, you know, when you do any job, it's your first time, every job has a minimum wage. You know what I mean? His job is just to put this cast together, and then his guy has to go to payroll. You know, and there's a minimum wage for everything. You know, back then, we're talking about like 95, I'm not sure it was. When I did it in 99, because it came out in 2000, minimum wage was $800 a day for like a speaking role. You know, and I worked overtime, so I was there for like an extra couple of hours and made like $1,200. And then when the movie come out, I probably made me another couple of thousand. You know, I had a very limited role. But what did it do for me? It took me from making $500 a show to $2,500 a show, you know, and then keep going up. And then I think I was one point stopped at like 5,000. And then probably one time got to 10,000. And then when social media came out and I made a presence there, and then boom, shot up to like as high as it could go. So, So you can, those who complain, it makes no sense, because that movie put all of them on the map. You know, and every movie, there's a budget. And then, you know, and you're new. It was Chris Tucker's first movie. What do you think they're going to pay you for your first time doing anything? So the second time is when, you know, the second time they want you back, then they got to give you a certain amount of money.
Yeah.
You know, same thing like when I did Meet the Blacks, the first one, you know, I worked a whole week for like one or two weeks for like 10 grand. You know, when they did a part two, I'm like, oh, no, buddy. I need some money. Because that means for you to do a part two, that means you made some money in part one.
Right, right. Nah, for real.
So now I need like a huge amount of money, and then I need like a percentage of whatever.
Right.
And they paid it, you know.
So do y'all at this point, like, you know, you being in the career, you know, back in the day, Comic View, we were just discussing this. Comic View was like our outlet to find all these dope comedians, you know what I'm saying? Or you had, you know, the other one. So now, do you feel like social media helped you propel, because you just stayed relevant through it all somehow. And we were like, damn, you stay so relevant. You know what I mean? Do you feel like the social media is the biggest part that
plays? Well, right now it is. I mean, because I remember when I came out, of course, Comedy View was my first break, of course. And then when Next Friday came out, it kind of helped, because see, with us, our audience, we like to connect things. So Next Friday came out, they'd be like, oh, that's an African nigga from Comic View. Well, you know, I went, because when it came out, I went, got me a ticket, went to the theater, sat in the back, and watched how people react to it. Like, oh, that's an African nigga from Comic View. So I'm like, is it a connected Comic View to that? You know, and I remember, and Mike Epps, he didn't even do, like, maybe he might have did one episode of Comic View prior to Next Friday. Because I sat back and I watched how they reacted to Mike Epps the first time on the screen. And they were very judgmental. Like, who is this nigga taking Chris Tucker's spot? Oh. You know what I mean? So Mike, you know, they had to earn his love. You know what I mean? He had to earn the love from the people. And I sat and watched it. And, you know, early in the movie, it was kind of slow. And then, you know, Mike didn't really, like, wake up to, like, that whole scene where, like, the girl, when the girl came, Baby D came, and then he started going in. He's talking about the snacks. She be sleeping and not even be snoring. She be snoring, not even be sleep. But that same.
Yeah.
That's when, like, they're waking up to Mike, and then boom, he just took it from there.
Did you freestyle that line? I'm just a bitch-ass nigga.
Yeah,
did
yeah. I freestyled that. So the movie, in fact, the funny thing about Next Friday, when we did it, after it was shot and edited, you know, we had, like, a screening for the actors and the directors. And I watched it, I'm like, what the fuck? I'm like, we did so much funnier things. I didn't even like what I did. Because we did, me and Mike S freestyled at home. We had all kind of crazy. I wish I could find the stuff they edited out. 20 times funnier than what we did. And the only reason why it came out that way, because 90% of the time, the nigga that's editing the movie was not on set. Get this nigga the footage, just go edit it. And the editor's job, every editor is trying to get an Oscar. They're trying to win something. So you got to get the best angle, the best this, the best that. So the nigga just picked the parts that had the best angles for him, you know? And because I'm.
It was hilarious, though.
But, you know, I didn't like it till I went, sat back, and watched people react to it. And then I felt better about it. And the only thing that was in the script that we said was, I can't get jiggy with this shit. Everything else that we did was ad-libbed. Yeah. You know, me and Mike Epps. Because at that moment, we've known each other for about, it was just like 99. We started about the same time. He might have started like 93. I was probably like 94. So we've known each other for like 5-6 years. Comedians, we all like, we all family. We all know each other. You know, we all came across each other, whether it's like an audition, whether it's a competition, whether it's like, you know, on set of like a Def Jam, on set of a comedy. We've been seeing each other's faces. So we're familiar with each other. And Mike was in New York. I know he left Indy, went to New York, and I was in Philly. So, you know, he'll come to Philly and do a show. He stay at my house. You know, we'll go do a show in New York. We see other comedians out. We're like one family, and we've known each other. Every time we get together, it's a roast fest. So when we get on set, we just continue that same shit. So we just ad-lib the whole fucking movie.
Did you ever get tired of people coming up to you and saying, I can't get jiggy with this shit? Like, how often did you have to?
Every day. And the funny thing about it, I'd be in the airport and I had my fans pull up and all white people don't know who I am, right? It'd be a nigga put up to me like, hey, you black bitch, what the fuck are the white man like, my God, why is he insulting that guy? Jesus, are you okay, sir? You want to call the cops? This guy just called you. Yeah, I'm like, no, it's okay. You know, that's how my fans show me love. You black bitch, you ugly nigga, fuck you, punk bitch. I'm like, I love you too, motherfucker.
Now, you've always been very good about, like, taking, like, when people scold you or post pictures, you always repost it. Yeah. Like, does that not fuck with you? Like, at a certain point, it's like, all right, motherfucker, this is how God made me.
Nah, you know what? The fans are who got me where I am. So every chance I get, man, I show them love. It's hard for me to say no to a picture unless I'm running to catch my flight and I'm running late. I'm like, man, you got to get me another time. But without the fans, man, you know, I wish every entertainer felt that way. Like, without the fans, you ain't shit. You know what I mean? So every time, you know, whatever it is, whatever they got to say to remember who you are, those are my lines, and that's what made me who I am. So if they want to repeat it, keep repeating it.
Yeah.
You know, don't matter.
Now, I got to ask, this is a personal question, man. I watched it, Couples Retreat.
Yeah.
And I seen you on there. And you had it set up to where every dude was jealous because you had it set up to where you could still sleep with other women. And niggas was like, how you pull that off? So I just want to know, man, how did you pull that off?
You got to pull that shit off early at the beginning of the relationship. You can't be 5 years in, 2 kids in here. Can I get some side bitches? No. You got to do that shit from day one. Bro. You know, when I got with Ryder, it was, I had been, just got out of like a 4-year relationship. I've been single for like 8-9 months, living my best life. And then when I became single is when I realized, damn it, I can't be faithful. My dick ain't made for one person. You know, I finally realized that because in the past, I just lie and cheat and lie and sneak and do all that. And then when I finally became single, I'm like, okay, I got some money. I got a nice house, got a nice car. Like, why am I going to lie to? Why am I lying for? Who am I lying to? Like, why? Why don't I just be me? Live your truth. And I'm like, man, I just said, I had like three, four chicks. I'd get with something, I'd put them all together, you know, and I was a good time. And then when she came in my life, you know, she kind of like, she was a little different because I felt like, you know, every other girl that I was seeing, like if I'm taking a trip, I had to fly her out and I do this. And when she came in my life, you know, she scammed me to me because she'll fly herself and take me to expensive dinner. Did all that shit that I wasn't getting from.
She reverse tricked.
Yeah, she reversed it. She tricked me. Motherfucker, you got me. She did all that. Now I'm spending the money. Punk bitch. I'll see you in court, motherfucker. Yeah, she got me real good. But, you know, it was turned on to me because I wasn't used to that. I'm used to, like, got a fly chicken. She's like, fly herself in, take me to dinner, you know, nothing. You know, and then also, you know, men, at the end of the day, men want to be treated like a baby. You know, we like babies forever. She come and do things, cook, clean my, just made me feel like a king, you know. And then she was trying to lure me in, you know. And when we got to the point where she was trying to lure me in, I said, listen, I mean, it's all great and good, but I can't be with one person. So if you're okay with me, you know, sticking my dick here and there, this will work. You know, and then we had to put some. Yeah, but you gotta do that from the beginning. I know you can't be an average nigga. You can't be broke and do this. You know? you can't even afford your own girl. How you gonna cheat?
Right.
I've been watching, was it Cheetahs, nigga, bringing a bitch to the crib? How you gonna bring a cheat at your house, nigga? You can't even afford a $100 hotel. You gotta be different. You gotta be able to afford it. Cheating is not for broke niggas, please. So if you're broke, just be faithful, motherfucker, okay? Yeah, but it's not for the average person. You gotta, it's, but if you don't feel like you're an average nigga, you meet a girl here, you know, I like, and women just want honesty. I guarantee you 50% of them will say yes if y'all come to some kind of term, and as long as you're not being disrespected, you know.
I'm one of those women who agree, right?
You can sign my side chick list, motherfucker. Oh, that's your nigga. Okay,
that's my husband. But thank you. So I agree.
Okay.
I feel like a man of a certain stature should not be tied to one piece of ass for the rest of their life. That just seems ridiculous, right? I live a great life, by the way, so it paid off.
Nice.
But are there, with you and your lady, previous or current, are there any set of rules? Like, hey, like, you know, don't bring them here. Don't, you know, don't do this. Stay within these guidelines. Or is it kind of
well,
just
I mean, we're still going through the rules. She, you know, she, she don't like me. She want me to like, you know, she want me to just stick with one person because then feelings are big, you're gonna start catching feelings. She actually want me to have two at the same time. That way, if you got two girls, then you're not gonna feel like, you know, you being attached to one. Huh?
Ain't that like polygamy?
No. She meaning like when I'm cheating, she want me to be like cheat with two girls together.
Gotcha.
Meaning like do a threesome. That way nobody catching no just ain't catching feelings. You know, but we're in a very crazy era where, you know, entertainers catching all these trouble, all cases, you know, getting people you're not comfortable. You know, it might be women out there that purposely out there looking for cases. There are chicks out, fellas, be careful. There are women out there looking for cases. If a man has any history of doing anything bad to a woman and that a woman will purposely come out, go after you, and because you have a history, you always be, you easily be found guilty, you know? So be careful. And because of that, I don't want to just like picking up new chicks every time. I'd rather just stick with like four or five that I'm familiar with, that I know well and that I trust, you know? So we're still debating till today.
So what's the protocol when a side chick asks you for some money?
It's a turn. When a girl asks for some money, it's a turn off to me. Big turn off. You know, if I'm with somebody, you know, you should like almost feel and know when they need something or whatever. It's you know, and I prefer a working woman, a hardworking woman, you know. Mm-hmm. But I don't. I'm the type, you know, birthday, Christmas, stuff like that. I'll gifts. I like to give. I give, and I, you know, sometimes if I could sense, you know, when a woman needs something, I'd be like, you know what, just this for you. Mm-hmm. But I, you know, when it. Sometimes when chicks are baggers, they just bag early, you know, right. Or they'll just try to do certain things on purpose just to like give the opportunity to bag. And a lot of time, you know, all pussy ain't good pussy. Some women just trying to give you the pussy because they want to have the opportunity to bag you for money.
Right.
You know, and when you've been around for a while and you fucked a lot of women, you did through it, you get to sense that. Sometimes I know this bitch just gonna give me some pussy because she wanna hit me up tomorrow and be like, oh, my rent is due. So that pussy you gotta turn down.
Now, it's not just you, but if you were looking for a certain type of side chick, what are some do's and don'ts for looking for a side chick?
I want, you know, a quiet one, no loud chick. I always want to, you know, go take a picture in my crib. You know you're in my crib. You know you put this picture up, my lady gonna see it. She gonna be like, why? And my crib in LA is like, it's like a landmine. You know, it's certain things in there that people know and familiar with. So you don't come in there taking pictures and posting it, and people don't know you're in my house. And, you know, sometimes they just do that to be spiteful.
Right.
You know, so just like a low-key woman is important.
What about kids?
Oh, yeah. I have kids. I don't never judge anyone with kids. Kids, you know, I love kids. I love children. You know, but I'm if it's a such, I'm not about to be stepfather. You know?
I was going to say, have you ever had to buy like a PS5 or some Jordans or some?
Yeah, you know what? I would. If I ever met the kid, you know, and I'd do some shit like that. But I don't recall that happening in the last few years.
Have you ever been invited to a P. Diddy party?
Never. No, I never been to a P. Diddy party.
Would you have went?
You go to a party, that don't mean you have to participate in whatever's going on. If you go to a party, here's my thing, you know what I mean? Even Meek said it the other day. Like, you know, it's some freak niggas in Hollywood that we know are freak niggas, and they're doing freaky shit, and you know. If I'm going anywhere closer than freaky niggas, my homies are with me, or my ladies with me. You know what I mean? I'm gonna be put in no uncomfortable situation, you know, period. And Meek said that too. He said, when he goes to his band party, he go with homies or with him. You know, people are with him. So, you know, because you don't want to be put into no uncomfortable situation, period.
Now, that made me think of a tweet you had where you said, a nigga jacking off on the plane talking about his mental health, you just a freaky ass nigga.
He said, who was that? What's that rapper?
Designer.
Oh, yeah. Choking his chicken on the plant. You ain't shit, my nigga.
Then you said, you know, in America, it's mental health. In Africa, it's the devil. So is that what they blame? Like all their, like everything they do that bad in Africa on the devil?
We just find to be really, you know, America is a very open country where people are just free to do shit. You know, I'm sure back home people do things too, but everything is done really privately, secretly. You know, even recently where, you know, gay is very open in America, you know, man can marry a chicken or dog. Y'all could do whatever y'all want in this country, you know. Mm-hmm. But, you know, certain part of Africa, you know, it's illegal. You know, so if it's illegal, just keep the shit in your privacy of your own home, you know, don't. If you go, certain countries, you go out, a man holding another man's hand, he will get arrested. So us things that we find to be different or whatever, you know, you keep that privately.
You had another tweet that was funny that you said, tell me what celebrity and I'll tell you what part of Africa you think
they're from. Where did she go? Where the party from? Okay, go
and
ahead.
Then you said Diddy's from Nigeria. And I'm Nigerian, so I was like, God. wait a minute. So what is it like in Africa, you know, is there a certain, because you're from Ghana, right?
Ghana, Liberia, yeah, I rap kind of those two countries.
Right, so is there a certain thing where y'all clown different countries in Africa, like stuff like that? Or?
Let me see. I mean, you know, I think we all, every African, you know, most of us look at us and tell what part we are from. You know, by the way we look, you know, the way we talk, the food, you know. So, I mean, certain things, I just know, you know, I spent some time in Nigeria as a kid, you know, and I know a lot of Nigerian dudes, and I know a few, you know. I said Diddy going to Nigeria because I think of all those places, all the different Africans that I know, I think Nigerians to me are more like on it. More freakier side of things. That's why I said Diddy going on the Diddy Nigerian. Yeah. You know.
So while we're on the subject, I'm albino. I have albinism. And I have heard a lot of things about like what happens to people with albinism when they go to Africa. And I'm just curious to know, is that factual about some of the things that they say?
Well, you know what? They're albinos in Africa. We have them too. We have our vinyl. But now here's a crazy thing about America. Like, things have, in the past, whatever this new millennium we're in, you know, the new 2000s, whatever, you know, things have changed in Africa since, like, recently. But prior, when I was there as a kid, in the 80s and the 90s, we didn't see colors. We didn't see, look, we could all be from the same country, like, especially Liberia. So Liberia is where I spent most of my African life. And Liberia, if you don't know much about Africa, Liberia means liberation. Capital is Monrovia, which was named after the President Monroe. So when slaves became free back in, what, 1800s, whatever it was, 1890-something, and most of them went to Liberia, like 7,000 of them went to Liberia. So they went to Liberia, and those people were considered conquer people because they weren't native, they didn't have a tribe. You know, so they spoke like English, and they were the intelligent ones. They were the smart ones. So if you do your history to Liberia, you know, because they were the smarter ones, they were the they were the one that president. You know, there were Black American presidents of Liberia back in the 1890-something because they were educated ones compared to the native, the local ones who didn't. They spoke their own dialect. They didn't, you know. And then those, a lot of those who can be mixed in with white people, you know, because a lot of rape happened during slavery. So then we had a lot of light-skinned people in Liberia, you know. And then you got the locals who are a little bit dark, but not as dark as Ghanaians or, like, people from Mali or Sudan, you know. So Liberia, you could see all this complexion in Liberia, every one of us. And we never saw complexion. We never looked at dark and light, you know. We knew albino was a little bit on the lighter side, you know, but there was no jokes. I don't remember jokes as a kid, you know. I don't remember no complexion jokes at all. We never saw color. I didn't see color till I came to the States, you know. And I'm like 14 years old. I'm outside. I'm in Newark, New Jersey at this time, hanging out with some kids outside playing. They're like, "You black?" I said, "Yeah, we are all black." I said, "No, nigga, you black as shit." And that's when I started, I'm like, okay, so now they have me self-conscious about my complexion. And that's something I never heard, you know. So it made, and then now I go out and I see another darker person, and he was like, "Nah, you blacker than me, motherfucker." So I'm like, but 80s, that was like late 80s, that was like Prince era, Michael Jackson era, you know, era where it's like, it was hard being dark, you know. And it took a while to, like, you know, till when dark-skinned people started becoming famous is when we kind of, like, came out of the woodwork, you know. Big Eddie Kane came out. I'm like, okay, can I come out and play now?
Yeah.
You know, and then Wesley Snipes, "Oh, my God, we playing again." And then Flavor Flav came out, "Oh, God, let me back in." Yeah, but we never saw those things, man. America, when I came to America, I felt like if you're biblical, you read it, the Bible, it says, you know, Adam, they didn't see shit till they ate the apple. When you saw the apple, you started seeing shit you're not supposed to see. And that's what America was like. I got to America, I'm like, damn, this is the apple. Y'all niggas see everything. You know, like, wow. See complexion, I see fat, and see skinny. In Africa, fat was good. Because you're fat, that means you ate every day. You was a rich nigga. I came to America, I thought every fat person was rich. My guy's like, "God damn. All the fat niggas, you eat every day, my nigga, you are rich." So the skinny niggas, you are crackhead, you are broke. You know, but so much shit America showed you, man.
Yeah.
And I wasn't ready for it. I was homesick, man. I was ready to get the fuck out of this bitch.
So is that really a thing where it's like this thing where black people and Africans and they feel like black people are inferior to Africans? Is that really
a thing? You know, I hear that a lot, man. And I heard that a lot. And a lot of that came from those who came here from Africa and the way they were treated. You know what I mean? The way they were clowned, especially you come in. Whether you go to, you know, a lot of the kids might get a scholarship to come to college in America, and they come and they go to school and they get roasted and clowned. So then they give them a sour taste in their mouth, you know. But these are just kids, teenagers. They just do it. American, that's what they do here. They roast. They make fun of people. And because of that, you know, they felt it was a little thing between where blacks felt like Africans are like them or we think we are better than them. Man, that's bullshit. Let me tell you right. You guys go to Ghana or anywhere in Africa, you're going to be treated like royalty, man. Women go there. I mean, I have some. I go to Ghana every other month. I build a free school in my village, so I go there, check up on the school.
Oh, yeah. Come on now. Wow.
I go to Ghana. I go to Africa every other month. Like, I purposely got my schedule that way where I take a week of every month. Right. And 1 week I take a vacation. The other week I go back home. And I took a lot of my female friends there. And they go out there. They go out. These guys treat them out. Americans are treated like kings and queens out there. So if you haven't been home, go home. You're all going to be treated.
Why do you think there's that disconnect? Because, you know, like.
With, honestly, man, he's a white man. That's why. That's the only I could blame.
Yeah.
Fortunate. because they're probably afraid that if you guys really went and enjoy Africa, they feel like every successful black people pack up and move. And America is great because of us, because of everybody that come from different places. You know what I'm saying? Right. So if LeBron James and every great person we have moved there, you know what I mean? So me, all layups in the basketball games. All layups and all three-point shooters, no dunkers, no nothing. But and it's and they try to make Africa seem like a bad place. Whoever is doing this try to make it seem bad. And and if you go there, you see like, what is this Africa? I'll show you my house. Africa's better than my house here in America. You know what I'm saying? And they won't show you that because they won't never want you to think that it's great over there.
Right.
You know, they want to keep. But yeah, it's Nigeria. Some of the richest people are from Nigeria.
Now I gotta ask you a question on that because I send money back to my dad in Nigeria, and I feel like he might be scamming me. How much is too much to send back?
Well, I mean the cost of living, and the thing about the only reason I'm even able, one of the main reasons I was able to go out there and build a school and pay for everything, like I pay for the teachers, I pay security, I pay for lunch, I pay for their uniform, books, everything, And it's like, it's a fraction of my income. You know what I'm saying? Because, my mother is an evangelist and she brought me up in a church life. And, I grew up giving 10% of your income to church. And church to me is a business. I went to church for so long. And, now when I grew up and I got older, I'm like, okay, this is a business. If I'm supposed to give 10%, as long as I'm giving my 10% to a different way, I'm giving it out, And cost of living, police and teachers, and I mean, they ain't making much. Between Nigeria, Ghana, Liberia, teachers and cops ain't making more than $200 a month. So if you're pop, what that nigga do for a living? Nothing. If you send that nigga $200 a month, that's good enough. You know what I mean? Unless he's trying to, if he need a home, he probably got, you got to go get a home, and then after you get my home, like, yo, dog, $200 a month is enough to feed you. Yeah. You know what I mean? Unless you got a bunch of bitches. Oh, hell no. Nigga, doctors ain't making that, motherfucker. So, yeah, $200 a month, $250 max, you should live a good life.
Man, I knew Africa was a great place when I seen Hush Puppy. This nigga went...
He's in jail in Dubai somewhere, right? Where is he at?
Man, I think he's in Dubai. Yeah. When you begin to go back and go home, and rebuild, did you like, man, fuck, I ain't going back. Like, I'm going to just, like Akon, for instance, like, he built his community, different things. Like, he just, or is this just a part of the function of your job? Like, you say you go back every month.
Well, yeah, at the end of right now, my income is here.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? And till I find a way to make money there, whether it's like, oil or jewelry or whatever it is that we have, the resources that we have that, other people are taking advantage of and we are not. I go out there and I still do my research. I'm still meeting the people, trying to figure out how I can make the kind of money I make here, there. Till then, I got to come up here and make my money. I got to give the government his part, And then I got, just every chance I get, I send a little bit of money home, man, because I'm not sure what's going on here. And I keep some shit over there, too.
For sure.
But right now, America is just, if I could live at home and fly to work every day, I would do it. Yeah. It's just too much.
What's the difference, would you say, between Africa and America that you see?
Well, we definitely have more opportunities here. Over there, it's like, here you have like middle class, rich people. And back there, it's like poor and rich. Ain't no middle. And the middle class is what keep America going, believe it or not. There's, you know, they, and back then it's like, you know, if you have nothing, you're going to be looked down as nothing. You know, that's a bad thing. Compared to America, you can be homeless and be a millionaire if you put your mind to the right thing. And America has the opportunity, you know. And I'm telling you right now, I don't care what hood you from, where part you from, there is no excuse living in America. There's none. You know, I came here in this country with my mother. We lived in shelter homes. My mother at one point worked at McDonald's, made $50 a week. You know, we came from nothing, and I found a way. And if it wasn't stand-up, trust me, you know, at teenage years, I worked at Domino's Pizza. If I wasn't doing stand-up, right now, would have probably owned me like 5-6 Domino's Pizza and still make millions of dollars. So America, you can find a way. You can be a landscaper, find out how you own a landscaping company. You know, you work at McDonald's and find out you can own a McDonald's. You know, so there is no excuse.
So then, I have to ask, when you hear other black people talk about like, bro, there's no opportunities for us out here.
Yeah, I'm not falling for it. You don't care what projects you live in, where you at, you know, you can make it out of there. It starts at school, start listening to your teacher, you know, stay off the streets. You know, you got, it's choices you make. And I grew up in Southwest Philly, the hood of Philly. You know, and I had I decided I'm going to work, could make me $5-6 an hour, because I could have easily joined the drug dealers and well, I'm not sure where I'd be, probably not be alive right now. You know, so it's a decision we make, and we make this decision at a young age. And I know it's peer pressure, you know, it's tough out there, and you just got to find your way. You got to find a way to make the right decision. At 14, 15 years old, that's decision time in your life.
Amen. Do you have a side chick in Africa?
Oh yeah, I got.
And what do you do when they try to come back to America?
Well, he says the thing too, man. You can't just come up and come to America. America is the hardest place for a black man outside of America to come to. People don't understand. Europeans get visa. You know, they don't even need visa. You from England? You from France? You could just go online, do something, you come in for a few days. Man, they're not letting no Jamaicans in or no Africans. You can't just do that. America want to know why you coming here, how long you going to be here, and when the fuck you going back. And they got to feel comfortable. They got to know, they got to feel like they know you're going to go back to your country. You know what I'm saying? If a guy like you, let's say you 25 years old, you live in Ghana, you're like, I don't come to America. You go to the embassy, like, for what? What you come here for? No, nigga, denied. Like, they got to make sure, you know, I mean, if student visa is possible, you know, but like, he said, I'm just coming to visit. Visit who? How? Who? What are you living back on? How we know you're coming back? Mm-hmm. We didn't see your bank account. You know, if you're leaving like millions of dollars, okay, you might come back. You have a wife and kids, okay, you might come back. You got no wife, no kids, you got $10 in the bank, nigga, you ain't coming back. Denied. 90% of people that try to come to here that are black from parts of Africa gets denied.
That's fucked up.
So it ain't easy for you. I can't just go, I got a 30-year-old chick up there, oh, come on, they ain't gonna let her come. They gotta know that she's going to really go back. So it's hard. It ain't easy.
I bet you'd be like, I'm really going to send her back. So.
now I got a question.
Unless you go out there and marry a person, you go marry a person, then you can file for papers for them. You know, America respects marriages and all of that stuff.
I was going to say, again, when I went to your comedy special, you was firing everybody up, right? Has there ever been a point where a nigga tried to come up and run up on you on stage? Has that ever happened?
It depends. You know, sometimes, sometimes comedians, we do go too far. You know, I mean.
That was my question.
Sometimes we do. I mean, you say a joke here and there, okay, boom, it's over with. But if you just on one person all night and going, it depends what you're talking about. You know what I mean? Men, we have ego. You know, especially if you're talking about his lady, you going in and really hard. I've never had, you know, No, because I've been doing it so long, I kind of like know my limits. I know how far to go. When a nigga's getting serious, you know, when you got to know, you got to be intelligent at this. You got to know when to cut shit off. You got to know how to make them laugh again. You know, my thing, if I'm going to roast you, if you're not laughing, I'm not comfortable. You know what I'm saying? You know, I got to make sure the nigga I'm making fun of laugh too. Because if not, I'm like, okay, well, this nigga ain't laughing. Hey, bartender, give me a drink. On me, motherfucker. You don't come back with a gun and shoot up my fucking show because you pissed off. You know, but I don't remember, you know, like I said, maybe early in my career when I didn't know how to control it. I remember way back in like early 90s. I was on stage and was doing the Dennis Rodman era, and there was this one lady. She was in the front with blonde hair, and I called her Denise Rodman or some shit like that. Because then Rodman had the blonde hair, and she just poured a drink on me. I'm like, okay, good night, motherfuckers. I don't know what to do when the drink is on your fucking face. But, you know, that was pretty much it. But now it's like I kind of take control of how I roast people. You know, I'm not going to go in there and call nobody, you know. I'm not going to degrade nobody. It's going to be jokes that's obvious that we all see. You know what I mean? If you're fat, everybody sees you. That you're fat. You knew the fat joke was coming when you came and sat in the front row with a size 14 T shirt, nigga. You got a big ass head, you bald headed, you gonna get it. If you look like somebody, if I peep that, you gonna get it. I rose the obvious, motherfucker.
Now, one of the things, to harken back to that Cat Williams interview, he said something about you using a fake, a fake African accent.
He said you're a real African with a fake accent. I said, nigga, use a fake pimp with a real perm, bitch. So, you know, the thing about Cat, he's never been to Africa. We don't know what there's so many different countries. You don't know what each African person to speak like.
Right, right.
We don't. We don't know how, you know, Liberian people speak differently. Ghanaians speak different. Nigerian, Mali, we all different. You cannot tell me how I'm supposed to speak or what a real accent should look like. You never been to Africa. You know, he just, like I said, Cat was mad at me. He was putting everything together he could do to torture my ass. You know, and the crazy thing he said that was such a big lie, you know, but he wanted to attach himself to something positive. Like, you know, his interview, he roast people and he tried to make himself look so good. He said, when I go to every city I go to, I make sure I leave 10% of my money, whatever he said. Yeah, on drugs, motherfucker. You're a drug dealer. 10%. You make $100,000, you spend $10,000 on drugs, motherfucker. That's not leaving money for the city, you know. Then he said, if you consider yourself the African king of comedy, he said he had to talk with me. Me and this nigga never had no conversation. He said, you know, I told him, if you call yourself the African comedy, go to Africa and build a school. Nigga, who the fuck randomly tell their friends go build a school? That's not me telling this fat nigga I go build a gym. This shit make no sense. But you know what? Building a school is something that is almost impossible to do.
Right.
And he, you know, who did it? Fucking LeBron James, Oprah.
Yeah.
How many black boys have done it? So now I've done something so great, right. He had to find a way to attach himself to it.
Yeah.
And tell him that he told me to do it.
Yeah. Oh,
wow. So that way he could look good. Cat, he's a crackhead. Right, so I mean, a certain thing. I mean, the jokes are all good, but when you start lying, you know what I mean? And the thing about it, he said some true shit, a couple of true shit he probably said.
So the Hollywood part, right, mm-hmm. where, he, you know, they allude to the whole wearing the dresses, it's a lot of weird stuff going. Is there any truth to that in your opinion?
I don't know. Not, you know, the dress thing to me, you know, it's like, it's not that serious to me. Here's the reason, you know, if you think you go back to like 60s and 70s and 50s, even go to Jamaica, you know, Africa back then, before we were brilliant enough, right, to come up with great material, we had to look funny. So if an ugly nigga like me put a dress on, high heels, I look for you gonna laugh at me. So it's more of a visual thing. And they did that. That's what the comedians did back in the 60s and 70s. You know, a man put a dress on, it's funny, and then people laugh. It was more like a visual. You know, and in Hollywood, I guess I never really took that personal if somebody wore a dress. I don't think it meant anything. It just looked funny. You know, so I don't think it's too much. They're taking it too far. I don't think it's that big of a deal. Now, there are other things that make you do on movie sets. We've seen it. I'm not going to mention no movies or names or actors or whatever, but we've seen it. There have been movies where they make niggas' lips touch each other.
Oh, buddy.
Plenty of movies.
Hold on. What?
Plenty of movies. I don't want to get into it.
You talking about like off camera?
No, oh, on camera.
On camera. Oh, shit.
There's a few movies where they made as an excuse to make these men touch lips. That's the thing that bothers me.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? But like putting a dress on and shit. You just that day is what makes me say, okay, they trying to do something to you. Right. Or you sign up for something.
Is there a certain movie role that you would not do?
Yeah, I wouldn't do no. One of my favorite movies is Pulp Fiction. Right, more that scene that Vin Rains got fucked in the ass. He ain't anybody doing that. You know, fortunately for a nigga like me and like Cat and Eddie Griffin. We are comedians first, right? We make our money from comedy. You know what I mean? This is if Hollywood's saying they ain't ever gonna put me in a TV show or give me a movie, I don't give a fuck. I make good money going and telling jokes to my fans, niggas that love me and trust me and believe in me. I get my money from y'all. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. So if nothing happens, I will always have these people. As long as So with Hollywood, you know, there's some people that are just actors. That's their bread and butter. They don't only go, if they ain't acting, they ain't gonna eat. You know, so I'm not sure what they have to do to keep their jobs and do all that shit. You know what I'm saying? But like just certain people, when they just get to certain levels, I'm like, why are you doing that? You have millions of dollars. Why are you gonna let them niggas do that to you? Why are you gonna make you do this scene in a movie? Why would you let somebody fucking ass in a movie? You know what I mean?
Now, you think like part of it be like the desperation as far as because, you know, the wages we feel like actors certain really make, they're not really getting like for instance, Taraji P. Henson, she was like, we're not making this money I think we're getting. Like, so it's like these roles are what keep us alive. Like, you think some of it might be like the struggle, like just try to stay relevant?
Yeah, it's a combination of trying to stay relevant and hoping if you're gonna do this one big movie. You know, you might have to like take a little bit of money and do this movie because this movie might change your life. You know what I mean? This movie might be the one after that might be where they will finally show you some respect. Mm-hmm. You know, like when she did, what's that movie, Benjamin Buttons, we figured like anything after that, they should really respect this lady.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Because that movie made millions of dollars. So what you got to do and I'm not sure how much power these people have to like, hey, you know, if they don't want to pay you a lot of money up front and you think the movie will do well, just try to get a back end deal. Like, hey, you know, okay, that's fine. I'll take this little chump change, but can I get like 5% in the back end? You know, but like I said, a lot of these actors, man, that's their only livelihood, you know.
Is there a movie that came out that you feel like you should have been in? Like maybe Black Panther?
Yeah. Oh, yeah, definitely Black Panther.
Yeah. T'Challa!
Yeah, I think every movie needs a comic relief. I don't care how serious the movie is, how much this, you want a part where you need a laugh. Yeah. I think Black Panther, I think they should have called me. Right. You know?
Nah, for sure. Who are the comedians that you feel like stand-up comedy-wise are the best?
Alive or dead, what do you mean?
Like, don't matter.
Right now, like from beginning to the end, let me see my top 10. Top 10 alive and dead. Okay. So when I came to America, I missed the Richard Pryor era. Mm. You know what I mean? It was the Eddie Murphy era when I walked in. So I saw Delirious and Raw. And Delirious and Raw, that shit is like motherfucking 40 years old. Delirious is like 40 years old. I think Raw was like 87, 88. So not quite. But Delirious and Raw are still relevant today. You can watch it and still laugh. And I mean, everything he talked about, even a lot of the people he roasted, we know them now. And it was 40 years later. You know, so I put, you know, and then of course, Beverly Hills Cops and Eddie was just the man. So I put Eddie at, you know, number one to me. Put Eddie at number one. And then I got to learn about Richard Pryor, you know, and then I think they say he was a goat of all times. So I put him at number two. You know, I think Bernie Mac, just his life was so short. I think it was so much we could have got from this guy. You know, he died at 50. 50 is like the prime of your, as a comedian, it's the prime of your life. Because at 50 years old, you've been doing comedy. Comedy is something you start in your early 20s. So you're like a veteran. You know, as you get older, you get wiser, you get better, you get tougher. And I think we didn't get enough Bernie. So I put Bernie in like 3. You know, then we're going to go to like, let me see. Oh, I love Chris Rock and I love Dave Chappelle. But what I like, you know, Dave, you know, turned down that $50 million because, you know, there was a certain things they wanted him to do on the show that he wasn't comfortable with. And I respected that, respected him for that. You know, even though I was very mad when he didn't do that season because when they was doing a promo for that season, he never did. I did a promo. I was a comedian. I was paid to do a promo on that show with him. So I did a little promo skit with Dave on that season that poster came out that he decided not to do. So I was pissed.
I know.
You know what I mean? I was pissed about that. But what I like best about people is like, you know, to be thrown out and for you to come back and fight. You know what I mean? He turned out $50 million, but like now what? You get $20 million every time you do a special. You know what I mean? So I respect Dave for that. So I think Dave is like number 4. Because I debate me to him and Chris Rock, because I love Chris Rock. I think Chris Rock is so brilliant. I always liked him from like, I'm Gonna Get You Sucker. That was, you know, he was like the king of cameo. I was like probably the top cameo scene in the movie. And I think when I did my cameo, I think I became number 1 cameo in the movie.
Yeah.
I can't get jiggy with this shit.
Yeah.
Where's your manager, that pink motherfucker? You look like that player hit out with so much shit. I'm not daring receipt. Kiss my ass, so what? Please don't hit me. I'm just a bitch ass nigga. So I put Chris Rock at number 5, right? And then let me see who else after that. Oh my God, what are the comedians? That's my top 5.
That's cool. We'll take
your top 5.
Yeah, right, top 5. Let's go
there. Is there a difference between comedy club funny and social media funny?
Oh yeah, you know, and a lot of those social media guys that you know they get a little funny 1 minute skit and you know and they did try comedy and it was not easy. Not easy at all. The bomb on stage, the struggle, you know. And then some guys just found a way to, like, go to the comedy clubs and work out material. Like, DC Young Fly, he was on the first one. Started off on social media, roasting people, build a fan base. And then started going to open mic night, and now DC has developed into a real comedian, you know. Jess Hilarious, same thing, developed into a comedian. B. Simone developed into a comedian. Desi Banks is doing his thing, you know. Ha Ha Davis, he's still, you know, figuring it out.
Yeah. Do you think T.I. is funny?
You know, T.I. is so legendary, man. You know, and he got so much confidence in himself. He feel like he could do anything. And I got to give him props for that. You know, I was there the night he got booed in New York. You know what I'm saying? And for him to, like, bounce back and still, you know, he got a lot to talk about. He got, you know, he has potential. You know what I mean? I haven't seen him lately, you know, but I heard he's been doing his thing. So I got to see him again. Because now it's like, okay, dude, it's been like 3 years now. And 3 years is like when you should like really have it figured out by then. So I have to see. I haven't seen him lately. I got to see him like now to kind of like judge him or determine how well he's
doing. How much would you charge him for some coaching lessons?
Charge who?
T.I.
How much would I charge him? Oh, T.I. I don't want to be on it. T.I. I think he already knows. Yeah, T.I. ain't taking no advice from nobody. Because when, you know, when he started, we was like, T.I., okay, he's starting this. This is what you do. That's my advice. You know what I mean? I was like, you got to host the show, T.I. You can't be the headliner in a comedy show. You know what I mean? You cannot, but he was headlining. You know, I was like, T.I., host the show. In between hosting, play your music. You're a legend. You got hits. T.I. like, fuck that nigga, I'm a headliner. You know? So I got to see him do his thing. I'm not sure. I haven't seen him in a while. It's been like probably a year since I saw him perform.
So we got a big fight coming up. You got Jake Paul and Mike Tyson. Who you got?
I'm Tyson, Mike Tyson, boxing in his damn underwear. Man. Yeah. Jake Paul, knock his ass out. I'm just playing. Punch him in the nuts. I'm just playing, man. Who I got? It's probably one of them fights gonna be all set up, man. I'm not sure it's gonna be a real fight, man. I'm not sure it's gonna be a real fight. You know, I watched the Tyson when he fought. What's his first one? It wasn't Roy, was it?
Yeah, Roy Jones. It was a draw, I think.
Yeah, man, niggas in their 50s, man. They ain't
Yeah, that's a wild concept.
They're not hitting that hard no more. I mean, Tyson would knock me the fuck out, I'm sure. Yeah. I'm sure he would knock my ass out. Right now, they just fighting for the money. They don't like it.
Man. Oh, man, I've been watching a lot of BMF, and I'm just curious, did you ever run across BMF just during your time of doing, you know, comedy?
BMF.
Okay. BMF, Meech, Terry, the notorious drug dealers that they got. Black Mafia. Black Mafia.
Oh, the real ones?
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, 50 Cent got the show. He said the real ones.
I don't recall. I know, I mean, one thing, gangsters are big, they love comedy.
Right.
Road gangsters love comedy. And I remember when I was in Philly, I think this one lady that promoted a show, she used to date a BMF member. Mm-hmm. I think he passed away or something. But that's all I remember. I don't really know them that much. I don't know them that well. But they're comedy fans.
Yeah.
Should black people be buying Trump's tennis shoes?
About what?
Should black people be buying Trump's tennis shoes?
I mean, if you buy, listen, man, if you like shoes, buy whatever you want, man. Yeah. Shoes is shoes. Yeah, man. Because I guess you figure out if you're buying it, you're supporting him. Is that why you look at it?
For sure.
You know, he's just trying to pay his little $355 million debt. You know what I mean? That's what that is. He's trying to raise money. I don't care. Mm-hmm. I mean, y'all laughing. He's going to be by the wind.
Dude, so... I know you're saying, like, in your country, you're building. Do you think you would ever get into politics on that side?
Yeah, I would. I could see myself later because I'm passionate about stuff, you know. And I've been around the world, and I know what's best for what, you know. I'm more for the kids, man. I think the future starts with the children. You know what I mean? It's, you know, they don't really. A lot of times, they don't really. People don't care, especially in Africa, they don't care much about the poor. And I came from a poor, you know what I mean? So I know what it's like to like come from nothing and become something. And I know what these people need, you know what I mean? And I know what these African leaders do, you know, and I won't be, most of them, I'm not gonna say all of them, you know, but they, most of the time they just go in there just to like get the money and be out. They don't give a fuck
right
about the people. And I care about the people, so. And that's what a real leader is, man. You gotta really love the people.
Hey, man. Is it hard to take Cam Newton seriously when he wear them hats?
Man, that's his style, man. You know, I dress crazy, too, so I can't be judging another crazy dressing nigga, man. Poor Cam, man. You got jumped by them kids.
Bro.
Nigga, I got to go. Your time is up. Y'all got like 1 minute, motherfucker. Yeah. So you better think about the most important question.
So let's talk about, man, what you got coming up. What's Michael Black?
Appreciate that. What I got coming up? All right, so, you know, I made some promises to myself. You know, I've been like, you know, besides going on the road and touring, I've been lazy with certain things I wanted to do. You know, I mean, last year I did accomplish my mission of getting a TV show. You know, Tyler Perry Studio gave me a show. We shot like 4 episodes of the Michael Blackson show. So if you haven't seen it yet, go on BT Plus, watch it. So those are pilot. What pilot is a show, it's like a showcase.
Right.
You shoot it, people like it, they shoot more. I'm very hard on myself. And when I did that show, I watched the show, I'm like, this shit's funny as fuck. You know what I mean? So everybody go watch it, you know, hit up Tyler Perry Studio. Hey, we need some more of this back. That was my 2023 mission that I had accomplished, and I did it. So now I'm just waiting for them, like, let's go shoot some more. I'll be ready to go. For 2024, I definitely got to put a special out. You know what I'm saying? I've been depriving my fans of a special. you know, and I also got to put out my own movie. So yeah, so those are my goals. But besides that, I'm touring the whole freaking country. You know what I mean? I'm back in Texas April 18th to the 21st. I'll be in Houston. And then just go, just follow me on IG at Michael Blackson. For those who went to a public school, it's MichaelBlacksoN.
Well, you and 50 are cool. You ever going to be in one of his series?
Nah, we talked about, you know, me, I'm more of like, I like shit that has to do with me. I like to do my own show. You know, if we're going to do a movie, I got an idea for a movie. Let the movie be about. Let me, you know, it's easier to do things when you write the script yourself. I don't want to be cameo or nobody's shit no more. I want to start my own shit. So me, we talk about a few things. He want to fuck with me. That's my dog.
Amen. Man, we just want to thank you so much for coming and sitting down with us. You are a legendary, funny motherfucker, man. And
I appreciate that.
You're like, bro, the words can't express, man. Oh, when you're back in Texas, if you're ever back in Dallas, come fuck with us, man.
Definitely, it's man. The best I had part. A good time, man.
Hey, and it's the best part. Michael Blackson, you are a real life street star.